Hello, people, and welcome back to the Outbound Podcast. We are now back with another episode, which is now 2 weeks in a row. So, progress from last year. How are we doing, guys?
Not doing bad. Got a smile on our face.
Myself, I'm okay. How are you doing, Richard?
You know, I can't complain. We recorded this around 9:15, so the Chelsea and Borough game is still going on, but we are winning 4-0, which we are now guaranteed to go Wembley. Hey, you cannot celebrate this code. I'm sorry. You've self-proclaimed yourself to be a Milan fan. Stay over at Italy, please. Don't come and celebrate this success.
You see how I'm getting exiled from my local club?
You were there when you were. You weren't there when we were finishing 10, 11, 12. You were in Serie A, Sonny.
Yep. He left us and said, I'm not supporting Chelsea no more. I'm going to go and stick with my Milan boys with Giroud and Liao and Pulisic and Loftus Cheek. So please.
Yeah, Chelsea contingent, bro. I'm supporting the Chelsea contingent at Milan. Like, this is the partnership.
We don't do that. The train has left the station. Wembley, here we come. You are not invited on the train. But as you know, with what has been a very, very, very disappointing season for Chelsea standards again, we have somehow made it into a final. So the first question I'm just going to ask is, what does this final do? What do you think this does for Chelsea season going forward?
I feel like obviously winning the trophy is always Chelsea standard. You know, in the last 20 years, obviously since Abramovich came in, you know, in 2003, within a club which has always aspired to be winning trophies and competing for major honours. And obviously the Carabao Cup is a trophy that we haven't won in a while. I believe it's, 9 years? 2015 under Mourinho. And at the end of the day, you know, you can't avoid the glory of winning. You know, regardless if it's the Carabao Cup, you know, you got to take it as it comes. And even though I feel like this season domestically in the league has been very disappointing, and obviously I believe, are we still in the FA Cup? I haven't really been focused on it.
Yeah.
Are we still in it?
You see?
No, but I've watched FA Cup games.
We watched Preston. I was still in the FA Cup.
I'll admit, Bolly, I'll be real. I've disowned myself in Chelsea for a while now. But no one can ever question the days I support this club. That's another point.
It's easier to support when we're listed in the Premier League. It was easy to support us when we were listed in the Premier League. This is the time we need this support.
I won't deny that.
Exactly. As I said,
I'm shameless, bro. I've seen Chelsea rise to glory from 2006, from the age of 6 years old. I've seen it. With Didier Drogba, Essien, I've seen it. I was there when we won the Champions League in 2012. I was there as a 12-year-old boy. I was there. I had the great moments. Chelsea gave me some great moments of my life.
Were you there when we lost to United earlier this season?
Nah. I was there.
No, bro. I was there. I watched the game.
He wasn't. Continue what you're talking about.
You were there on your screen. I was there in person. I was there.
You
are not a
Manchester boy. Of course you'd be there.
That's irrelevant. I was there.
You're on Burnley, by the way.
Abbas. Don't join Richard in this mocking. But anyways, come back to the comments I was saying before. Obviously, Chelsea winning a trophy would obviously be good because obviously we haven't won a trophy for a few years now. Obviously, 2021, obviously the last one, which was obviously the Club World Cup. But anyway, Chelsea DNA, what we know Chelsea to be is winning trophies, right? We're not going to say the Carabao Cup is obviously, you know, a big trophy because it is regarded a big trophy officially in this country. It's not obviously what we want to be winning. Like, it's not the creme de creme, but it's a start. You know, we haven't been the top team that we grew up to see Chelsea to be. So, obviously, I think winning the Carabao Cup will be a good start. It'll be nice, you know, kind of progression in a way. Obviously, it'll be Poch's first trophy in England. So, that's nice for him. Good for his confidence. And it's a confidence builder because when you start winning, you know that, you know, okay, we can actually compete. We want to win more. We like the Carabao Cup. We want more trophies. So, it will inspire these players to kind of, you know, have that hunger to win more. Do you know what I'm saying? And obviously, it will give Poch more confidence in that aspect. But overall, it won't make Chelsea a great season. We can't say that Chelsea, at the end of the day, will have a great season just coming to the Carabao Cup. No. Chelsea's season depends on currently on Europe, whether it's Champions League or Europa League. Now, for me, I have high aspirations. That's how I've always been with Chelsea. That's how I always will be. Yeah, for me, I would never say Chelsea will have a great season unless we get the Champions League. It seems very unlikely this season. So for me, apart from that, this season's a write-off. This season will be anything but average. If Chelsea can even get Europa League, it'll be average. You know what I'm saying? I don't give a damn. It'll be average. So in my opinion, even if Chelsea win the Carabao Cup, it's not a success. It's not a successful season. Yeah, it's nice. It'll build confidence. It's good to win a trophy. You can have a nice celebration on a Sunday. Yay! But by Tuesday morning, get 4 hours, everyone should forget about it. And we should just just the seriousness that we have within our team, the problems, the issues, the things that which is constantly kind of bringing Chelsea into disarray. That's the things we need to address come the end of the season, and how we're going to get Chelsea back to where they should be, which is competing for the Premier League title, which is eventually being back in the Champions League and getting out of the group stage and actually being a team which is serious. That's what makes Chelsea a great club, and that's what we deemed a good season, not a Carabao Cup. But it's progress if we do win it.
I mean, I kind of agree with the point you said. As I said, at the end of the day, it's not even the FA Cup, it's a Carabao Cup. I think what this trophy would do for us, I think, is more of a historic base type of trophy in terms of Chelsea. I think since the Roman era, Chelsea haven't gone 2 years without winning a trophy. And because we did win one last year, we don't win one this year, then it will then be like the first time, as I said, since the Roman era, we've now gone 2 years without winning it. It's also a thing you can then look back in like 5 years, 5-10 years time to be like, okay, this year Chelsea won it, this and that. But again, in terms of our season, as you mentioned, I don't think it does anything for us. And the reason I brought up the United game earlier was because even though Chelsea was shit before then, I still had hopes for the season. Since that loss, all my hopes for the season just died. And as you mentioned, you said it before, unless Chelsea get into the Champions League, you won't see a successful season. At the end of the day, and it might be a bit ignorant for me to say this because of the way I've grown up watching Chelsea win Premier Leagues and obviously two Champions League, but now is a point where it's in, because of all the success I've seen, even top four isn't a successful season. Unless you win unless you challenge for the Premier League or you challenge for the, or you win the Champions League, it's never successful in my eyes for Chelsea. So, as I said, it's a competition when you reach the final. If you don't win it, you feel a bit, because I remember last 2 years ago under Tuchel when we lost on penalties, and that seemed very infuriating, knowing you were just there and you missed out the chance to win the trophy. But in hindsight, as I said, the Carabao Cup doesn't do much for you. Like, at least the FA Cup has that prestigious of something. I mean, how many times has it gone from Capital One Cup to League Cup to Carabao Cup? Like, they just keep changing it. So I agree. Now we're in the final, I'll be fully focused, and for the full 90 minutes, I would support my hardest from like behind my TV screen. But I won't think like, oh, okay, if we win this, now our season has changed and we're on the march.
You know what? I might be in the opposite, where I think if we win this, it's somewhat of a success for Chelsea Football Club, because, and I think you guys are selling what we're doing right now a bit short. Last 11 games, so I always say this, a top team, the first priority for me is secure home base. Be a very good team at home or building towards it. That set your foundation. Your foundation is always home. Chelsea have one loss in the last 11 home games across all competitions. Regardless of the opposition, they're making home a tricky place for teams to come into. So that's the first thing. Secondly, getting into the final is one thing. Winning it is another. But if Chelsea win it, I always say this, the amount of players that we've got right now haven't tasted victory in Chelsea blue. Outside of a few that was there when Tuchel won the Champions League, the rest have never won a trophy with Chelsea. So it's a new feeling for them. But it's also a feeling that where they can look back and like, oh, wait, so we were able to be consistent in a certain period of time when we needed to be to win the trophy. And that's another thing. And probably third, you guys are saying like top four, top this, right? I think City will do well in the UCL. I think Arsenal will do well in the Champions League as well, or somewhat. That allows that fifth position to be open. It's 9 points. It's the second half of the season. You continue to build at home, you're still going to drop points everywhere you go. There's a potential to drop points in any game, of course. But the main thing is, if you can somewhat instill some form of fear factor that, oh, wait, let's say Brentford, for example, they're coming to Chelsea. It's not like Chelsea of last year where you can roll them over. They're coming to Stamford Bridge. That adds more to it. And then you can start picking up points when others in front of you drop points. I always say this, the league position right now, it doesn't really highlight Chelsea Football Club. I think we're better than our league position overall in general. Sure. And I think we can progress further. But I think also another last point on it is it keeps Poch in the job. I've always said this, for as long as he was in the League Cup, he has his job. The second he drops out potentially of the League Cup, he's out of the job. But what helps him now is if he loses a final, but going up to the final, he's won 3 out of 4 games in the league and he's still in the FA Cup. He's securing the job as well. And I think that's what you need in that consistency. And funny enough, you guys mentioned about winning first trophies and stuff. Roman's first trophy, if I'm not wrong, was the League Cup. Todd Bowley's first trophy potentially could also be the League Cup. So there's a mirror image of what the start of success is. And that's why, like, for me, I think it's a big thing that Chelsea are in the final. And it can potentially make the season successful.
You make a good point, Abbas, which I don't really dispute most of your claims. But just to kind of reiterate, me and Richard were not against Chelsea winning the Carabao Cup. We're just saying that overall, if Chelsea don't get European football this season, which is either Europa League, I don't care what Conference League, Europa League, as a minimum, then I won't see this season being a successful season for Chelsea.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's what I'm just saying.
That's the point. My point is, Chelsea definitely can still get Europa League. Like, that's not out of the question. Because it's what? It's 9 points between here and top five, being Tottenham. And I think that City and Arsenal will progress further enough for us to get the coefficiency rank to get that fifth spot. So I'm not even ruling out Champions League at this point of view. What I just need from Chelsea Football Club, really, is to continue the home form. And then in games where we drop away games in terms of lesser teams, go there with just the same way Bournemouth got beat by Liverpool 4-0 is what we need to do against teams of a quality of Bournemouth and win away, because I think that's where Chelsea now for the second half of the season, in 2024, need to strengthen out. Because at home, I'm sitting here and I say, we're pretty confident we get results as in wins against the lesser and then draws and potential wins against the top teams, which we weren't going last year.
No, obviously, I agree with that standpoint, but I said it's just a bit sad how far we've, because as I said, Chelsea Football Club talking about like getting the Europa League and stuff like that. Like, obviously,
this is why I became part time. Like,
you're no time. You're unemployed. You're unemployed. You've been let go. You've been made redundant by Chelsea FC. Go and become full time at Milan, please. We don't want all this.
I'm going to report this to the FA.
Roger, you are a full-time Chelsea podcaster, but you're redundant as a fan.
Correct.
Podcaster? No, mate.
Because I like to talk at Chelsea, because what's going on? It appalls me to see how we dropped our levels and to see...
Stop saying we.
Which is going on the club.
Stop saying we.
Yeah, please.
We're all Chelsea fans by birth.
No, we were not. Obviously, speaking of, like,
they know the fans always have the receipts.
I chose to stay here through these tough times. You chose to leave for Milan, but obviously, speaking from the Italian league, because obviously we know Onana came from the other side of Milan. And obviously, he's been in the, I won't call it newspaper because like nobody reads that no more. But he's been on social media of like for the bunch of series events. So obviously, we all know a couple of weeks ago why everyone was going to join up with their country to prepare for AFCON. This guy thought it was suitable for him to stay over and try and play the FA Cup game and the Tottenham game, in which he didn't make an error, but the save looked funny. He eventually joins up. His plane gets delayed. He had to take bus, TFL, none of the private jet stuff. And then he gets benched for the first game. He plays the second game and he has Baker character syndrome, where he's coming to turn attacker, how to take an attacking free kick. And then he concedes like 3 goals with the worst lateral movement I've seen from a goalkeeper. And then all of a sudden, he's benched for the final game, of which Cameroon won today and they weren't free, I believe. So what do you guys make of this whole Onana situation? And do you feel like he should be benched for the rest of the competition, given how from the outside, he's looked like he's disrespected his country.
Can I take this one quickly? I'm not African, but so listen, you know me, I'm not the biggest Mo Salah guy, yeah? But I saw a lot of rubbish online that Mo Salah doesn't care for Egypt. This guy, he's injured, but he's going back to Liverpool. He don't care for the team. Now, if he's going back to Liverpool, it's to rehabilitate to get back for AFCON. Like, he doesn't have to go to AFCON if he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Onana stinks. Everything about this just stinks. There's nothing more to say about it. You have done, without doing a press release, what Lukaku did, where you alienate yourself. You're not the biggest fan favourite at Man United at this moment because you made mistake after mistake to basically knock them out of the Champions League.
Yep.
You then have the chance to be somewhat of a hero with your national team. I always say this, national pride should always come before club. Actually, no, I don't always say it. That's a lie. Sorry, retract that. But I do believe...
Why not?
Just because your nationality is what you're born into. Screw it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. You're stuck with it, though. But I do believe certain nations, you have a bit more pride on them. Onana, when you look at AFCON and the prestige of it, it's like, imagine, for example, an England player say, I don't want to go Euros yet. Let me just play this game out first. That's just not going to happen. So for you to say that...
I think what he did is worse than saying, I don't want to play for the Euros, because what he kind of did is kind of like, I'm bigger than the country. I'm the main man here. Because it's one thing saying you're not going to Euro. Another thing saying, I want to play this competition, but I'm going to come in my own time. And I think that's even worse.
You're right. Because it's that thing that we talked about where you have certain African players who play in Europe who have that ego that they, because I play for Man United, because I could just put myself in. And now, if I'm Cameroon, I'm like, yo, okay, we progressed. We might have conceded two goals and it was close right at the end. Obviously, my guy handballed it. But at the same time, why not get to Onana and say to him, no, like, you don't deserve a spot. We're going to keep running with this. Whatever happens. And then when he goes back to Man United, this guy's going to go back to a team where he's got hardly any confidence and go and then have to fill in that number one spot again and have more stink fest, because I just don't understand what was going through his head. Nobody's held you back. It's not like Ten Hag has ever said to you, like, you see the under like 20s, under 21 tournaments, you have players or coaches that will say to a player, don't go. Just stay. Like Garnacho, for example, I think it was the World Cup or whatever for Argentina. I think Ten Hag said to him, no, you're not going, staying with us pre-season, whatever. Nobody has said to you, do not go. They have given you a blessing. You've taken it upon yourself to not do it. Yeah. You stick it up against Spurs, you concede two there, then you go back, you screw it up somehow, somewhere, because that will always happen. You don't deserve to play for Cameroon like that. Just stay on the bench and let them thrive, or even if they fail, let them fail. But you have had a stinker.
Yeah. Of course, do you have anything to say on it, or should I?
I love it, by the way. Let me just put it out there. I love it.
I have nothing really to say in another situation.
As I said, I agree. And it's just like a follow-up, because remember, was it in the World Cup? Was it World Cup where... I don't know if it was the same coach as in China. I showed them a research in it, but in the World Cup, when he was dropped because of he wants to play out the back and the manager didn't want it, and everybody was supporting Onana because, like, obviously you're playing for one of the top clubs in Europe. That how can you then bring a goalkeeper and tell him to change the style and stuff? But as I said before, I think this is really just, as I said, it's funny from the outside, but when you really deep into it, it's kind of what we were saying last week in terms of giving AFCON a bit more respect, because nobody in the Euros, obviously the Euros and World Cup will be different because that's played during summer and all club football stops, but no other African, like Nicholas Jackson isn't doing this, Sadio Mane isn't doing this, Salah isn't doing this, and blah, blah. And all of a sudden you get a big contract for Man United and you think, oh, Cole Palmer scores again, and you think you're bigger than the country. So I don't think he should be able to play again for the rest of the competition. In fact, I think he should be told to stay home, and the audacity to think he could turn up on the game day and think he will start as well is embarrassing. But we'll see how it unfolds if he starts the next game, because, as I said, he's been dropped for two out of the three AFCON games, and the one he wasn't dropped for, he absolutely stunk it up. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, just moving on to the final section, basketball, because we had two big... In fact, I'm not going to count this as a big performance, because Karl-Anthony Towns, he's the only person I know that can drop 63 points and still look like a loser while doing it, because he's single-handedly, like I won't say single-handedly, but he cost his team that game trying to go for the record. I don't know if it was attempted for the record, but in the second half, he shut them out of the game, and that's why he was benched in crunch time when you have 63 points. But the bigger story is Joel Embiid, who dropped 70 points in a win, 21 free throws, which means it was 49 in open. Well, I was going to say open play, but it's not football, in open court. Did this game show you anything to me?
Open court.
Yeah. Did this game show you anything about? Yeah, Adam Silver, you know where to find me. I can rewrite the rule book. Yeah, but did this Embiid performance yesterday teach you anything about Embiid? I'll start with you, Kojo.
He didn't teach me nothing new about him personally. Look, for me, I always will say, wow, that is an amazing stat. To join the Summit Club, you know, that's a big, big achievement. Even though it was against the worst team in the Western Conference, the San Antonio Spurs. But at the end of the day, the fact that you've got 70 points, your team is a winning team, further Western Conference, notching the 29th win of the season. You're playing like an MVP candidate again after winning the MVP last year. So I feel like for me, I think Embiid is the, I think it didn't teach me nothing new, but it just showed me that Embiid is a quality basketball player. I think the only thing which is missing for everyone to really say, like, you know what, he's legit the best player in the world, is if he can transfer what he's doing in the regular season into the playoffs. That's where we're all going to universally agree as basketball fans that Embiid is arguably the legit best player in the world. Because obviously right now, when we say he's the best player in the world, most of us are going to say either Nikola Jokic or Giannis Antetokounmpo, or maybe potentially, you know, just for nostalgia, LeBron James, as you would say, Richard, you know what I'm saying? But really and truly, what'd you say?
I say he's the goal. I don't think he's the best player anymore. Okay. That's not a conversation,
You want to throw that title to LeBron? Fair enough, cool. We'll get back to another time. But obviously, with Joel Embiid right now, obviously, the fact that he's probably going to win back-to-back MVP honors again, he's leading his team to another playoff route. Obviously, the big goal for him, realistically, is to kind of go far in the playoffs. And I think, do your best to make the conference finals. Because obviously, if you haven't made the conference finals, I believe, since 2001, when they lost, got to the NBA conference finals, and obviously they got to the finals with Allen Iverson and whatnot. So I think that's the big aim for Embiid. So obviously, congrats to him yesterday. Hell of a performance. Did his thing. Great history, especially on Kobe night as well. They, you know, obviously Karl-Anthony Towns got 63 points. That's a big achievement as well, because for a center to do that in this modern day era, you always got to give a round of applause. So the fact that we saw two centers on Kobe's anniversary of his historic A1 performance, kind of go nuts and put up big numbers. I think it was a great testament to how far the NBA centers have come in recent years. So, yeah, but with Embiid, again, I think, you know, what he needs to do next for everyone to kind of say he is the best player in the world, which I think is the case, you know, to show, because obviously I think skill-wise, he's definitely up there. His numbers in the season definitely attest to that, but obviously there's a big drop-off when it comes to the postseason. I'm hoping that this season can be the year where he shows everyone that I am the guy. And maybe it's not really to do with Philadelphia where they get to in the postseason. I think if he can show everyone that, you know what, I'm putting up the numbers. Because sometimes, look, you can get, I don't know, Philly, they're third right now. If they stay third, they'll probably face, right now, I think the sixth seed is, I think it's Indiana. They'll probably beat Indiana. And I believe they'll face a second seed if they get through the second round, which would be Milwaukee. Now, obviously, I probably put Milwaukee on paper ahead of them. So if you get knocked up on Milwaukee, look, you can say, you know what, fair enough, they got beat by the better team, which we all can agree on, most of us anyways, right? So even if you get knocked out in the second round, it's how great does Embiid play in that series? How good is he from taking his team almost to the edge of games against the finals? That's the thing we're going to really judge. Because I feel like it's not necessarily about Philadelphia getting through to the conference against the NBA finals or winning the championship. It's Embiid's performance. Because we can all agree that throughout his career in the postseason, Embiid has looked the shadow of himself in the regular season. So if he can take a stride this season to be the guy and have a really good playoff run, individually, most importantly, and obviously team success, will glorify Embiid to being a reasonable candidate for the best player in the world, legitimately, then I feel that's what's going to kind of set Embiid's career apart.
Do you know what? As for the performance first, just on it, like, do you know what? Fair enough. Like, we were saying before, and I kind of was probably a bit harsh saying that, look, people score so much that does it really matter? What I meant by that was that, look, it's an accomplishment, but in the totality of things, what does it mean? It's yeah. a high-scoring game. To your point about postseason, I agree that going forward, it's not necessarily a case of, okay, what do you do in regular season? Because you got your rewards last year. You after years where you've been snubbed, potentially, you got your MVP. But at the same time, when you're saying, oh, they could potentially play Milwaukee in the second round, if they potentially play them, they have to beat them. Because at the end of the yep. day, all you're going to be known for is, you know, you're that nearly center. You're not really there for me type of guy. Like, even if he puts up the numbers, you got to find a way to drag that team by hook, by crook, whatever it is. You have to find a way. Just the same way Kawhi Leonard dragged Toronto to win that chip, you have to find a way to drag them to a position they've not been into. Whether that is you having the ball significantly, and when I mean having the ball, I mean like most possessions. Whether that is you putting up 50 a night, whatever it is, you have to find a way to beat a potentially more superior team than you in terms of the total basis of it. Like, Philly aren't a poor team.
Yeah.
But what stops Philly is when you, it's year on year, but like, you know, semifinals, that's their ceiling. Crack the ceiling. Go through it. Because if you don't, that's what you're going to be remembered for. Like, yes, you'll have your MVP. Yes, you'll have your All-NBA titles and All-Star appearances, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, if you can't even make a conference finals, we're going to look at you like, okay, whatever. It's you were good, but you weren't great. And I think that's where Embiid needs to go. Like, it can't be an excuse that he was playing against a superior team, because it's not like the Philadelphia 76ers are a poor team.
Yeah, and I agree with you, because, and I think it's the thing where is in, I think 70 points is great to have, but I think two things to look at here is, obviously, in the modern NBA, I feel like, because Donovan Mitchell just did it last season, I think Damian Lillard did it as well. Was it last season as well? Or recently?
6 years ago.
Yeah, my point is, the 70
seasons. Booker done it as well in his, I think, second season.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago. But my point is, 70 seems, you know, like the new.
Still in the recent.
Yeah, so, but 70 seems like the new 50. And I think it's another thing of Embiid has disappointed so much in the playoffs that we can't really appreciate his regular season anymore, because it's like, you've done this before, show us something new. And I'll always be an Embiid over Jokic, even though I think Jokic is better. I think I'll always just support Embiid over Jokic more, just because of that personality. And I'm a fan of his playing style as well. But then, as Abbas said, we can't use the whole thing of he lost a superior team, because now Embiid is now looks at as one of the top five players in the NBA. And when you're that top five, even if a team is slightly better, you should be able to perform to the point where it's in, you're the best player on the court. You eliminate Giannis, you eliminate Tatum and all these guys. You can't just keep getting, and then your points drop by 10 points a game, and then you get eliminated, and there's a thing where we start blaming injuries, even though the injuries things is valid, but you start blaming injuries and the teams you come up against. So,
as but I said, the question is, Richard, I do apologize, because I'm not a fan of interruptions, and I'll make a statement. This will be the last time I interrupt you
ask your question.
but the thing is, you say that regarding the question regarding, like, oh, you can't just keep blaming the team. But if you look at it in a way, players that have taken their teams or the threshold when the team's been mediocre, if you're really honest, it's just LeBron James, like, in recent memory, if you really think about it.
Because
LeBron James is regarded to you guys as the GOAT, and he's in the GOAT conversation. So, because the B is not there,
you can't be a top four.
I'm not saying they're not a terrible team, but I'm saying it's like, if you look at it, like Philadelphia, even with Embiid playing very, very well, we also
the have a question.
That's why you're wrong.
That's
why you're wrong. Because
tell me that you
won't finish. Because the thing is that Embiid, if you just look at the whole thing, it's not like Embiid has just been losing to elite team. If you go back, they've been knocked out to the Heat couple seasons back.
They lost to the Heat 2 seasons ago. Yeah,
they lost to the Heat 2 seasons, which was embarrassing. Considering what they had. You look at the Hawks series, losing to the Hawks as well. That's embarrassing. So that's two off the top of my head.
But was the question is, listen, guys, please. Was that primarily the fault of Joel Embiid that the Philadelphia?
It don't matter, bro.
I think if Embiid did his job, then they go through. I think, especially the Heat one, he was embarrassing. The Hawks one, obviously, you can argue the whole thing with what Ben Simmons did and everything, but
at and that Doc point... Rivers, the coach of Doc Rivers as well. That was a
At the same time, we're talking about, if I'm correct, the Hawks were the 8th seed. Am I correct?
They were.
So losing to a seed like that, it takes more than coaching. It's like, your coaching...
Well, it's coaching, you got a player... Which didn't want to shoot the ball. Ben Simmons.
That was one play. I'm not basing
the... Bro, he was sideboard for two games, and he went to game seven.
But I'm saying, the player that Embiid is, he's looked at as one of the top five players in the league. And even at that point, even though he wasn't top five against in the Hawks series, he was a top 10 player in the league. I think with the team that Philly had, he should be able to take them over that series. And they lost in, was it six games? Or did it go seven?
No, it went to game seven. They lost the game seven at home.
Yeah. And then when you look last season as well, you had two games to close out. He didn't play well in any of the closeout games as well. So yes. I've just named like three series that I feel
so did James Harden. He didn't play well as well.
Yeah, but we know who James Harden is.
Abbas. I can remember, I think it was Abbas or Richard. Maybe Richard as well. I remember that when Philadelphia lost to the Boston Celtics in that game seven, wasn't one of you guys calling for Doc Rivers to be fired for his horror show of coaching during that series?
But this is the thing, what you realize is, I've always
two things this can be true, by the way. Am I wrong? Two things can be true, by the way.
Hey, but you got to realize something. I've always run an agenda against Doc Rivers. I call him the most overrated, hyped coach in the NBA. I've always said that.
Do you make those statements as well? Or do you have a genuine basketball reason for that?
No, but can I say something as well?
Go.
Doc Rivers might be the reason why the Philadelphia 76ers didn't win the series against Boston. Doc Rivers has nothing to do with why Joel Embiid played so crap. And that's why
I agree. Two things
can be true because sometimes, like, you need your, like, you've seen it time and time in basketball when you talk about the greats with LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. Sometimes you just need your superstars to save you when you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And in situations when Doc Rivers is putting in that poor coach performance, if you're the superstar that Embiid is, sometimes just save him, like, please. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, when he plays as bad as he did, Doc Rivers could not do any coaching job to get the Boston Celtics get Celtics over that series anyways, if his superstars playing the way he's playing. So I do believe Doc Rivers lost them the series. But I think if Doc Rivers did a good coaching job, if Embiid plays the way he's playing, the results are still the same or Boston Celtics still win that series. And that's the point I'm trying to put across in terms of... But, and I love Embiid.
What I'm saying is that, and I do agree, because I've lamented those points during my initial, monologue. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I meant to those points. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm not disputing, but I'm just saying that we need to kind of open our perspective here. I'm saying that if Embiid has a great playoff run, statistically, because the numbers he puts, do you know what I'm saying? If he improves and actually plays the same way he's been playing the regular season, but Philadelphia comes short. Because for me, even when I was at Philadelphia...
Let me just mention something. Listen. You know James Harden, back in the Houston days, he would put up insane numbers in the playoffs. But you know what would happen? They'd lose. And then people would say it is James Harden's fault because he can't get them over the line in some playoff series. And I'll be honest, I was one of them that said, because of his ball usage, because what he has to do over X amount of games, he gets tired. Joel Embiid has less to do in terms of bringing the ball up the court or anything of that nature to be tired. It is on him at this moment in time to not go to the NBA championship. But if you want people to look at you and not just be a regular season merchant, you have to push Philly to a point that they haven't been in a long time. And then we can be like, that's fine. Look at Milwaukee when they won the chip. I'm sorry, nobody turned around and said Milwaukee at the start of the season were winning the ring. But Giannis found a way to do it.
Yeah.
Why can't you not?
No, it's I just... agree.
And I remember the conversation about Giannis as well, when he got bounced against when Kawhi stole his chain, and then obviously he gets, I think, was it swept or he got bounced in the bubble as well. Remember the conversation when he won back-to-back MVP and they're like, bubble, you know what, Giannis can do this, blah, blah, blah. And then he finally goes and he goes to get that ring. So I think that is what Embiid needs to do to gain people's respect again.
I do agree with you, Geoff. I do think for me, for us for university to recognize Joel Embiid as the best player in the world, you know what I'm saying? In terms of skill set, he's definitely amongst that conversation. I do agree that he needs to kind of take the Philadelphia 76ers to a good playoff run. But what I'm saying, in my personal opinion as well, is that for me, if he can have a good playoff run this year, I think that kind of propels, you know, the idea of him being generally the best player in the world to a good extent, in my opinion. Because I feel like for me, also depends. We're seeing improvement here.
Yeah, because it also depends what the people, like other people in the conversation is Giannis. Like, if he plays well and the other two play well and they go further than him, remember what he does, he's not overtaking nobody. So, as I said, it depends on what the others do as well. So, but as I said, we'll see what happens. As I said, 70 points is no small feat. As I said, it's a major achievement to be able to score 70 points in the game. It's just, I don't think it will get appreciated what he does because of his playoff stinkers. And that's just the harsh reality of the situation. So, yeah, but we'll see what happens in the NBA. I do think that performance does probably put him back in the lead for the MVP race. As long as he plays 65 games, he will probably go back to back, which is fine. I think he should be two times anyway, so I'm supporting my boy Embiid. But yeah, that is...
Yeah, I agree. He should be two times anyway by now, because obviously he got robbed the previous year.
Yeah. Fuck Jokic. But yeah, that is all we do have time for today. And don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms at outbound_UK on TikTok, YouTube, Twitter and Instagram, and we'll be back next week with another episode. So thank you for tuning in, and until next time, see you.